another episode of Pearls of Passage. I'm your host, Ellie Atherton. I have to warn you that the wind is howling outside my studio today, so you might hear it in the background. I'm continuing with my series on spirituality this week. It's been challenging to get people to sit down with me and do interviews because when I ask the question, how do you define spirituality? There are predominantly two answers, or responses rather, that I get from people. The first response is, I don't know. The second response is, oh, that's a tough question. Being curious by nature, I wondered why. Why is it that we don't know how to define our spirituality? And why is it a tough question? So we're going to continue on digging deeper into this. I know what spirituality means to me and how I define it, and what moments in my life, in my days, where I feel spiritual and connected spiritually. So I'm going to continue talking about that, talking about what I've learned from dying people about their spirituality, the questions they have about it, and also the people I met who had no spirituality or no belief system, and what they taught me. So thank you for listening, and I hope that you're taking things away from this conversation that will help you dig deeper into your own discoveries of your spirituality. Over the years, as I've sat with dying people, my definition of spirituality has continued to change and grow. And in working on this week's podcast, I thought I would see what the actual definition of spirituality is according to the dictionary. And it was no surprise to find different dictionaries had different definitions. According to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the definition of spirituality is 1. Something that is ecclesiastical law, belongs to the church or to a cleric as such. 2. Clergy. 3. Sensitivity or attachment to religious values. And 4, the quality or state of being spiritual. Personally, I found these quite simplistic, and none of them really resonated with me. But as I went on, here's what I found. Oxford and Britannica Dictionary define it this way: the quality of being connected with religion or the human spirit. Okay. That was starting to feel a little more in line with how I feel. Cambridge Dictionary ties it directly to religion in its definition. Spirituality is the quality that involves deep feelings and beliefs of a religious nature rather than the physical parts of life. Personally, that one I can't agree with because I feel that spirituality is not just related to religion. Georgetown University's National Center for Cultural Competence offers deeper descriptions and meanings of spirituality. I appreciated these more. See what you think. They actually offer 7 definitions. I won't read all of them, but here's one: the experience or expression of the sacred. Another is the search for transcendent meaning. It can be expressed in religious practice or expressed exclusively in their relationship to nature, music, the arts, a set of philosophical beliefs, or relationships with family and friends. The third definition says individual search for meaning. Definition number 4 says the search for meaning in life events and yearning for connectedness to the universe. The 5th definition, a person's experience of or a belief in a power apart from his or her own existence. The next definition, and the last one I'll share, a quality that goes beyond religious affiliation, that strives for inspiration, reverence, awe, meaning, and purpose, even in those who do not believe in God. The spiritual dimension tries to be in harmony with the universe, strives for answers about the infinite, and comes essentially into focus in times of emotional stress, physical illness, loss, bereavement, and death. So there, we have a few different definitions. And maybe one resonates with you. I know some of them resonated with me, but I think in the end, the bottom line and little discussed fact regarding spirituality, in my opinion, is that it's defined by the person experiencing it or perceiving it, and also by those who lack it. So that last point brings up another interesting place where we could debate whether or not every human has a spirit, whether they recognize it or not. I've known and cared for people who are atheists and agnostics, and some told me they could relate to spirituality, and others said they had no relation to it or concept of it. Remember, the definition of an atheist is someone who doesn't believe in God. And an agnostic is defined as someone who doesn't believe it's possible to know for sure that a God exists. Now, when I was young, I remember thinking that atheists and agnostics, that those were bad words, that they were bad people, you know, that, for example, I remember being in high school, and maybe it was an English class, I don't remember, but the question came up around God and beliefs. And I was raised Catholic, and I had gone through all the ceremonies, you know, First Communion, Confirmation, and so on, and I was going to catechism. And I had come and asked my parents one day if they would allow me to explore other religions, because I wasn't feeling a deep connectedness or spirituality in the Catholic Church. And I wanted that, but it just wasn't happening. Much to my surprise, they said, sure. So I started, you know, going to some other churches on Sundays just to see how it felt and if I felt connected. So when this question came up in class, I shared, very innocently, I shared that I was questioning, you know, what this meaning of God was. And one of the other girls in my class was very religious. Her family was very religious. And she said, "You're an atheist?" You know, and everyone looked at me. I felt like I was a criminal because I was curious. And I said, no, I'm not saying that I'm an atheist. I'm just saying that I'm looking and asking questions. And she said, exactly, you're questioning. You're saying you don't believe in God. And I tried to stand my ground and just say, I haven't come to any conclusions. But I think the point of this story is that this is what happens to people when they want to ask questions, they want to discover, they want to go deeper, they want to define their spirituality outside of the church. And I think it's why I can't get people to sit down with me, because they feel like they're being criticized or, breaking a rule of the church by thinking about possibilities. So, you know, I hope that we can try to demystify spirituality in your own way, demystify it. I do think there were people who came along. Remember Stephen Hawking? I think he helped many people understand that atheism is more of a scientific view than simply a non-religious one. Let me share an excerpt from his 1988 book, The Brief History of Time. In it, he says, "Ever since the dawn of civilization, people have not been content to see events as unconnected and inexplicable. They have craved an understanding of the underlying order in the world. Today, we still yearn to know why we are here and where we came from. Humanity's deepest desire for knowledge is justification enough for our continuing quest. And our goal is nothing less than a complete description of the universe we live in." Now, that sounds to me like he did see a connectedness within the universe. Was this his form of spirituality? I wonder. We'll never know because it was his, it was private. And although he did define himself with certain terms, he also seemed, by this statement, to believe that there was a connectedness amongst living things, or that there was a quest to discover what that connectedness is. Now, along this scientific vein and way of thinking, I want to share a story. One fascinating incident early in my work as a hospice nurse taught me that someone could spend their entire life as an atheist and decide to find their spirituality and a belief in God in their final weeks of life. This man, my patient, was a scientist, a physicist, in fact. He had no issue with his family's religious beliefs and had always, you know, gone to church on Sundays with them as a family practice. But he felt strongly that there was no God and nothing more for us once the human body's heart, lungs, and brain ceased to function. I was amazed when one day in a private discussion, he told me that he was rethinking 8 decades of belief and actually shifting toward accepting that there was something more in him, a spiritual component. He reported he was beginning to feel a connection to a creator, his creator. Rethinking the wonder of his life, not in scientific terms, more so as miraculous humanness. A truly new concept, he confessed, for his scientific brain. He told me the change came after his wife of 63 years had passed away. He said in the weeks and months that followed her death, there was undeniable sense of presence, of her presence around him and often. Initially, he said he questioned it, wondering if it was imagined or real, and tried to find ways to scientifically explain it away, blaming it on his tiredness, sadness, loneliness, but finally, he realized it was comforting. He was looking forward to the moments when they happened, and his scientific brain was beginning a new research project. Something he had spent his life believing was impossible was now very real, and he welcomed it. His wife had always exhibited a strong faith, and now he wondered if maybe he should have paid more attention on Sundays when he sat in church next to her, ignoring the entire process, thinking about work projects or what the remainder of the day would hold. He wished he could see her again in another realm, and now had hope at the thought of it. As his disease progressed, he began sleeping more, and our discussions grew. He soon began to have visions and visitors that he said were not scary. In fact, he found them comforting. I suggested that he pose his questions to them, since they could provide answers which I did not have. Over the coming weeks, he became more relaxed and peaceful, reported getting the answers to his questions, and even a vision of his lovely wife who smiled and reached her hand toward him in one dream or vision that he experienced. Not long after, he died in a calm and gentle manner. I imagined taking her hand and going on to discover what he had barely allowed himself to imagine during his lifetime. This was a powerful lesson for me, and one I have not forgotten. It's never too late to make discoveries during our lifetime. What I learned as I observed people approaching the end of life was that defining their spirituality and connecting to it in ways that were meaningful and comfortable for them could offer peace, not just while they were living, but also while they were dying. I also began to notice that some people's spirituality or religious beliefs actually brought on discomfort. Yes, in other words, suffering. Let me explain. I was hearing that sometimes people had great concerns about where they were going after they took their last breath. They asked me, what would it be like? Would it be torturous? I had no answers for them. People who had been taught that if they had not lived a good life or if they had committed a terrible sin, as defined by their church, after they died, they could expect to go to hell. I always found this extremely unsettling and was confused that the church, a practice meant to be built on a foundation of love, would leave its followers at the end of their days quaking in their boots with regard to punishments. I wondered, what about the teachings of forgiveness? Somehow many of the followers I was meeting seemed to be holding on to the teachings of punishments and not the teachings of forgiveness. For me personally, witnessing this so often sent me in search of deeper spiritual meaning in my own life. It made me question my definition of spirituality. It made me wonder about what came after that last breath in this human life. It made me want to connect to the promise of unconditional love, and I was learning it had to start with self. Because I was aware and curious, I was able to observe dying people with all of these curiosities in the back of my mind, watching them and listening to them as they processed through these questions, queries, and fears helped me to make discoveries of my own. And these discoveries changed and deepened my spirituality. It seemed to me that if during your lifetime you had a practice that brought you to a place of loving self-acceptance, forgiveness, and quiet peace amidst the chaos of everyday human life, then those were the places and the practices the dying were searching for or knew how to connect to. And once connected, they were using them to let go of living. And this ultimately allowed them to gracefully and gently accept their death, and most died peacefully because of it. By the same token, those who had not connected to their self in deep and meaningful ways or had never found a practice or belief that offered them comfort and peace in the process of living, many of them seemed to suffer more at the end of life. They also exhibited more fear of the unknown, more anxiety and restlessness, and they reported feeling that everything was spinning out of control. So here's another key lesson I learned from the dying. Letting go of control and trusting the process of dying to unfold was important because death is expected for 100% of living beings. And intuitively, the body knows how to die. From what I observed, trying to fight it, push it off, or control it kept people from finding the peaceful aspect of it. But the lesson goes deeper. It's about living and letting go of the control, because that's when we create the suffering for ourselves. And you might remember some of my episodes on forgiveness. It goes back to this teaching. It goes back to this point. So from the hundreds of dying experiences I witnessed, some people found peace. Others fought death. I learned that there's much work to do in this life long before we reach the end of it. And in that way, we have less baggage at the end of our life. Less to sort through. And it's easier to find the peace. At least that's what I observed in my patients. I learned that we can't put it off. We can say the work of dying doesn't exist. We can say that nothing comes after our last breath in this life. But the truth is, none of us know with absolute certainty what comes beyond this human life. I think it's wonderful that we seem to be getting more curious about death and dying. There's a big movement now toward learning about dying. Everywhere you turn are teachers who want to guide you on how to prepare for dying, how to embrace death through rituals, meditations, courses, and more courses. Don't get me wrong. I think it's wonderful that so many are wanting to discover more about this last phase of our life. But I also want to be cautious to say that sometimes, especially in this day and age, we have come to believe that everything can be taught in a classroom or in a series of courses. And furthermore, after we get that diploma, degree, or certificate, we believe that we have discovered the answers and the work is done. My dying patients taught me that the work is never done. No one is an expert, and we're all learning together. Finding the ways to learn and grow in your spirituality that feel the most comfortable to you beyond what may be trendy is what I'm encouraging you to pursue. If you notice that when you're out on a walk in nature, at the ocean, watching the birds, listening to a certain kind of music, that any of these moments bring a sense of calm, a joy, or an excitement to you, I suggest that these are the roads that will connect you to your spirituality. Spend some time just being still in those moments, breathing in the energy they offer you, and enjoying your connection to something greater outside of yourself. The different ways that people approach their final days of life taught me many things. Often patients told me they wished they had spent more time just being and less time being busy. This lesson speaks to an awareness of our inner self, our heart intentions, and this can be the best place to begin connecting deeply. I learned that in order to connect to my loving self, to find that inner knowingness and peace, I had to begin new ways of thinking and functioning in my everyday life. Increasing my awareness of the simple moments, like just breathing, considering my intentions before I move and speak, slowing my approach so I can be in the present longer, with less worry of the future and less regret for the past, all offered me a deeper sense of spirituality. For example, taking in some deep breaths before doing things, such as entering conversations or answering tough questions, really helped me focus more on my true intention for the outcome. I learned this practice at the bedside of the dying. They often asked me difficult questions, and I had to breathe deep, like my teacher Will taught me. I had to compose myself and think about the best way to respond. I wanted to get it right for them. I wanted to offer what I could. I didn't have all the answers, but sometimes I had a little piece of information that could help them find the answer that they needed. I think in the end, all the answers are inside of each and every one of us, and the answers are different for each and every one of us. I'll also be very honest to admit that putting this way of reacting into practice in my everyday life has taken much more effort and awareness than I expected. It's different than just sitting at the bedside of the dying in a focused conversation. Life happens quickly, and making space to breathe in and think before responding and acting can be a challenge. I work at it every day, and still, I struggle at times to slow down the reaction or the pace of things around me and breathe first. Another important lesson learned from observing dying people was that those who were more contemplative and accepting of their mistakes in life, seeing them more as lessons than failures, they all exhibited a measure of acceptance and peace around their impending death. And that ability to have such peace seemed to indicate that when present, it can lead us gently out of this life. In other words, they taught me that the more accepting we are of ourselves with our flaws and our grievances, seeing them as learning experiences and not as black marks on our soul, then the greater ability we have to be a loving, living, joyful person and a loving, peaceful, dying person. Letting go of self-judgments in and of itself, I learned, can make for a more peaceful everyday life. There will always be challenges and challenging people in our lives, but I am so grateful to my dying patients for constantly reminding me of this important lesson. Additionally, they were teaching me that how I approach the challenges and my ability to find grace and compassion in these moments not only reduces my suffering, but also reduces suffering for those I interact with. Through these COVID times, it's been a tough few years for all of us. Some people say they have been given the gift of time to reflect on what is working in their personal and work lives and what is not working. Many have made discoveries that led to changes toward greater happiness and fulfillment. I've heard this time referred to as the big quit. I would rather call it the big transformation. Sometimes these painful times of suffering offer us an opportunity for healing and growth. I know this has been the case for me, and I hope that it has been true for you too. Since talking about spirituality seems to be challenging and sometimes uncomfortable for people, I'd like to ask you to help me. I don't want to stop talking about this. There's much to be discovered. There's much to be learned from one another. And I think it's fascinating. Every time I learn a different perspective, I'm just in awe of the possibilities. So here's what I would like to ask of you. In future episodes, I'll be sharing some views from people who would like to remain anonymous. If you would like to share your answers to these two questions, you can respond to me via email, and I'll share it without using your name in a future episode. Here are the two questions. How do you define your spirituality? And when do you feel most connected to your spiritual self? Your answers can be one sentence, one paragraph, or pages. It's up to you. My email address is ellie@eleanoratherton.com. You can find it on my website under the contact tab. Well, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening, for bringing your open mind, and for being you. Our world needs you, loves you, and wouldn't be the same without you. Before we close, I have to say thank you to Designated Diver for the beautiful music that starts and ends this podcast. Remember, life offers endless possibilities. We simply need to be open to them. Here's to a good life and a good death. Have a great week.